Thank you for staying. I appreciate you more than a little bit. Nothing like understanding how you rank, is there? First, let me tell you a little bit of what we have in mind so that you'll know what's coming. Each night during Vacation Bible School, there are going to be three sessions where the young people will be going to the different learning centers. For that reason, there will be two bells that will ring 2 minutes apart at different times. Tonight, I want you to ignore those first two bells because we're going to go past the first two bells tonight because we're getting a late start. I plan to be through each night by the time the second set of bells ring. That'll be 5:40 tonight, and it will be 7:50, I think, Monday through Wednesday night, which will give all of you an opportunity to go and stand outside where one of the centers is taking place, especially in the activity center. There's plenty of room there where they have the walls of Jericho built. I think all of you will want to go there at least one of the evenings. Now, normally speaking, in Vacation Bible School, when we have it on Sunday through Wednesday, we have a tremendous crowd of adults on Sunday and Wednesday and a very small group on Monday and Tuesday. I realize that there will be some conflicts with some of you that will make it almost impossible for you to come tomorrow night and Tuesday, but I want to urge you to consider trying to be here all four nights. A lot of effort has gone into VBS. Of course, it's aimed especially at our young people, but I've tried to prepare some lessons and use some lessons in the adult classes that will do two things. One, show us how we can use simple things to teach great lessons that are from the Word of God. I think that's one of the outstanding characteristics of Jesus as a teacher. And also using some lessons that will bring back to remembrance at least some principles that I think can help all of us. Now tonight, I want to try to get through the first lesson by about 25 after, so that those of you who are students who need to go on to eat at Gano, if you remember when we set our service at 5:45, we said we would try to be through by, 4:45, that we would try to be through by about 5:30 because the cafeteria, I think, stays open till 6. And I'll mention that a little bit later. I'm planning two lessons each evening. And between now and when we're through on Wednesday night, we will have covered two object lessons, two lessons using the flannel graph, two lessons using charts, and two lessons using the overhead projector. There's a history behind some of these lessons. Some of you will remember the basic lesson. In fact, the first lesson tonight, I presented here not exactly what I'll present tonight, but the basic points on May the 1st, 1988. That's a little over 10 years ago. I'm going to use the lesson tonight in the first session on shoes. In 1984, 3 years before I moved here, I went back to Madison Street in Clarksville where I had formerly worked for a gospel meeting. A 17-year-old boy came up to me during that meeting and he said, "I remember a lesson that you preached when you held a meeting down at Dotsonville." I went back and checked and I had conducted the meeting at Dotsonville in 1972. I asked the young man how old he was then. In 1984, he was 17. We figured that he was either 4 or 5 when I had conducted the meeting at Dotsonville. Now, I'll tell you, when a 4 or 5-year-old young man can remember at age 17 something that you preached when he was 4 or 5, it's quite unusual. And I think that it points up how visual aids can help us in our study. Back when I first began preaching, I began to see some bulletin boards where there would be pictures of shoes and suggestions of how we are like shoes. I decided that it would be better just to have the shoes. And so I put together a lesson somewhere back before 1972, I guess in the late 60s I used this the first time, so at least you'll have to admit that I'm going back to the old paths. A lesson dealing with shoes, and I want to share that lesson with you tonight. There are different shoes that suggest different things. This is a sandal. In fact, any of you know what type of shoe this is? Any of you ever have one like this? This was Judy's at one time. I can't believe we spent money on it. It's called a Dr. Scholl's. Some of you ladies have a Dr. Scholl's. This reminds me of a sandal, and it only has one strap across it. That's about as much religion as some people have. They're just holding on with a little bit. They have a form of godliness, 2 Timothy 3 and verse 5, not real godliness. And if anything is a form of a shoe and not a real shoe, it's got to be that. They're the ones that want the milk of the gospel in Hebrews 5:12, and they've not grown enough to understand the meat of the gospel. They've got just enough to hang on. I never did get a pair like these. I never did want any for myself. But I did used to wear sandals, and even sometimes today we see people wearing sandals. In some countries, they wear sandals almost entirely, don't they? But the idea that I want you to see is that there's just not much shoe there. Got a lot of soul, but not much shoe. Just sort of hanging on for the ride. And I think we have too many people today that try to be Christians like that. Any of you know what you call this one? That's a loafer. A loafer. This is one that I've had for about 30 years. It was also Judy's shoe. And you can see how we had to wear them back at that time. That was back at the time that we had four children at home. You didn't get a new pair of shoes very often. She even wore through the front of the toe, but that's a loafer. You think there are any people that are like loafers? Those who loaf. In fact, one person said that he was very scriptural, that he was like Christ quite a bit because he was very interested in loafing and fishing. Not loaves and fishes, but loafing and fishing. There are those that are lazy. They are slothful. We're told to be not slothful in Hebrews 6 and verse 12. And we find Jesus teaching in so many of his parables the importance of work. You remember the story that he told about the man who had the two sons? He said to the first one, go, and he didn't go, and to the other one, don't go, and he did. And even Jesus said in John 9 and verse 4, I must work the works of him that sent me while it is yet day, for night cometh when no man can work. And I think we have too many people today who are like the loafer. They just want to loaf around and not do anything. Now, I'll have to tell you what I call this one. This is a Sunday shoe. And the reason that I picked it is back, and this was Judy's shoe. Can you believe anybody could wear anything like that? I never have understood how you could wear high heels. I just can't imagine walking around with my heel some 4 feet above my toes. Of course, I would have more leverage than most of you. Back when I was a senior in high school, we had a womanless dress review. And I borrowed an evening gown of one of our teachers who was plump. And I could wear it, but I never did find any high-heel shoes. And in fact, I had to go across the stage with loafers and an evening gown. And now that was a sight. But do not all of you have Sunday shoes, or at least for the kids? Some that you tell them you can't wear these every day, you've got to what? Save them till Sunday. This was one of those pairs that was saved till Sunday, and you can see why you couldn't stand to wear it 7 days a week. But you know, it's amazing how many people we have like that are just Sunday Christians. In fact, I sort of indicated that a moment ago, that we tend to have more people on Sunday night than Monday night and Tuesday night. And I don't mean to suggest by that, if you don't come tomorrow night, you're not a Christian. But I do mean to suggest to it that sometimes we just have certain days of the week. We want to go and worship on Sunday and then forget God the rest of the week. But the Bible says, take up your cross daily, doesn't it? Take up your cross daily and follow me. It's interesting to look at all the words that are used in the Bible that talk about daily. Now, this is a sneaker. I had this when I was doing a lot of camp work. I took it with me, so if we forgot the flag, we would just run this up the pole. And it would serve as a flag. But can you remember when we call what we'd call tennis shoes or something else now, we called them sneakers? And this was not one of those name brands, and it didn't have lights in the sole, but it was a sneaker. Know any people like that? I don't know where the sneaker got its name. I suppose that it was so soft, as far as the sole was concerned, that you could sneak up on somebody without them knowing that you were coming. And there are a lot of people today like that. They're sneakers. You just don't know what they're going to do next, and you have to watch your backside to be sure they don't slip up on you and do something they shouldn't. So we have those that are sneakers. Now, I'm beginning to get into some that are not Judy's shoes. In fact, there are not many people that can fill these shoes. I think that one's only a 14. We've got some that are big ones in here in just a minute. In fact, this is a 15. And this is the one that I always call the squeaker. Never did wear this shoe and its mate very much, even though it fit, because I couldn't walk anywhere without it squeaking. I never could figure out what there was about it. But every time I took a step, it would squeak. Now, I want that to represent complaining, and it may have had a reason to squeak. If I had it on and having to carry me, it may have had a reason to complain. But every time I would take a step with this shoe, it would squeak. I couldn't sneak up on anybody with it. But when I thought about it, I thought about how that represents those that complain. You remember in Acts 6, church began to complain about not taking care of certain widows. You go back to the Old Testament, the history of the children of Israel, particularly during the time of the judges, what did they do? They murmured and complained. And it seems like in every congregation where I have worked down through the years that there have been a few who are self-appointed complainers. They're almost as bad as the man whose wife fixing his breakfast and said, "What do you want?" And he said, "Two eggs." She said, "How do you want them?" He said, "One fried and one scrambled." She did that, and he came down and sat down and looked at him with a frown. She said, "What's wrong?" He said, "You scrambled the wrong egg." And sometimes even in the work of the church, there are those who are going to find something wrong with everything that you do. We jokingly say, and this is not really the reason, but we jokingly say that we try to have at least one mistake in the bulletin so that some people will have something to talk about. We usually have at least one there, and usually somebody finds it. And I don't mean that that's necessarily complaining, but we have those that are the squeakers in the church. Now, here's a shoe, and I have to tell you about it before you can understand it. My foot measures a 14B. That's good to tell you. So if you happen to run onto a 14B somewhere that's on sale, particularly if it's polka dotted by it, because I have a hard time finding shoes. This one was a 13. And back a few years ago, especially if I could find a 13 on a really good sale, I thought I could wear it. And I'd usually go ahead and buy it. This one was just too tight. I couldn't wear it. And I never did wear it very much. In fact, it's almost got a new sole on it. And really, I didn't save anything by trying to buy that one. I thought I was getting a bargain, and I didn't, because it was too tight. Some reason or other, just couldn't get my foot in it. Don't know why. It's only a 13. It wasn't big enough that I should have known that when I bought it. But sometimes in the work of the church, we're tight. In our relationship with each other, even in the family, we're too tight with what we have. We're told to be good stewards with what we have. We're told to be liberal in giving of our means to support the work of the church and to help others. And we certainly don't want to be like the tight shoe. And then we have the house shoe. Anybody else probably would not have this green, but that's the only size, the only color they had and the size that I could wear. When I go to buy clothes and shoes, I don't ask what color. I ask, "Have you got?" And then I begin to look. But this is a house shoe. And especially if you have a sore foot and you're wearing this, what do you tell everybody else in the family? Be careful and don't what? Don't step on my toes. I want it easy. I want to sit back. And a lot of times, especially we fathers and husbands, want to go home and lean back in the easy chair and let somebody bring us our house shoes and maybe something, a cold drink of water or a Coke or something. And we want to take it easy. What does the Bible say? Woe unto them that are at ease in Zion, right? And sometimes it seems to me that there are too many of us in the church who want to wear the house shoe and just be easy in everything we do. And then we've got those that have the overshoes or the boots. You know when I wear this? When there's bad weather. Never go get it unless there's a lot of rain and there's water or there's snow and ice. And by the way, just to show you how thrifty I am, you have any idea where this set of pair of boots came from? They came off of baptismal boots, Brother Wilcoxon. I wore a hole up here, but nothing wrong with the boots, so I just cut around the top and saved the boots. And then when it snowed and there was ice, I had my overshoes. Don't need this unless there's trouble. You know, sometimes we're like that in the church. I got a chuckle the other day. My brother-in-law, who preaches at Allgood out of Cookville, was talking about a family that didn't come to church very often. And he was talking about when they come. He says they come when they're hatched, matched, and dispatched. Now you have to think about that one for a moment. Birth, marriage, and death. Hatched, matched, and dispatched. And I'm afraid sometimes we've got too many like that who just want religion and want Christ when the going gets bad. You remember me telling you about the woman that called me one time and said her mother just died and asked me to come and bring God with me? First time, only time in my life I ever had that request. come and bring, she didn't need God, and I knew she didn't want him the rest of the time, but now death came, come and bring God with you. Is religion just the overshoe type? Let me show you two types that I think we need. One of them is the old work shoe. This and the match is what I wear when I'm mowing the yard. I like that thick sole, and I get my exercise. Anybody that can carry two of those around doesn't need to add any weights to his ankles in order to get exercise. It's dirty. It's got paint on it. It's scratched. In fact, when I get through mowing the yard every time, I take the hose pipe and just wash everything off of it as best I can, put it back out in the garage, and I've got it again. But you know what? Of all the shoes I've shown you, which one you think is the most comfortable for me? This old work shoe is one of the most comfortable shoes that I have. And when we can get people in the church and in our families to be like the work shoe, not be afraid of labor, not be afraid of sweat, not be afraid to get our hands dirty, be willing to do anything we need to do in the work of the church, we're going to get a lot done. And then there's a shoe that I have kept for years, and you ladies will understand this one better than the other. This is a patent leather shoe. You know what I mean by patent leather? You don't have to polish it. There was a period of time when I wore several like this because I got tired of polishing shoes. And when I went and got this the other day, I'd had this box of shoes out in that little house up there for I don't know how many years. It was just as dirty as it could be, but I just took a rag and started wiping it like that. And I want you to look how that shoe shines, especially there on the toe after I wipe it off. I think that's the way we are with Christians in the blood of Christ. Do we get our lives dirty? But when we apply the blood of Jesus Christ and receive forgiveness, what does it do? It wipes it clean, doesn't it? And we can have a shine. I'd wear those shoes when I had them, and I'd get them dirty. The next Sunday I'd get ready, I'd just take me a rag and wipe them off, and they shine just as... When we use the blood of Christ to take care of the dirt that's there, it'll give us something to where we don't have to worry about the shine. Christ can remove all the dirt. Now, I've shown you several shoes today, some that we don't want to be like, the sandal, the loafer, the Sunday shoe, the sneaker, the squeaker, the tight shoe, the house shoe, the overshoe, but two that we do need to be like, the work shoe and the patent shoe. But there's one other that I want to use to close, and that's the flip-flop. Had to borrow this one. I asked today at the eating if anybody had a flip-flop. Bob and Joan Brown said they did, and I don't have any idea which one this belongs to. The way it looks, it's almost got to be Joan's. But this is called a flip-flop. I don't have one because I can't find one that just fits just right, and I don't like something to be between my toes. So I don't wear flip-flops, but many of you do. Especially the children. But think about what I've just said. Flip-flop, what does that suggest? A lack of what? A lack of sincerity. Not being the same all the time. Flip from one thing to another. And I really believe that that's one of the worst characteristics that we can have. I think being sincere is one of the keys to being a good Christian and getting along with each other. And I want to leave you with the point on this lesson, don't ever be a flip-flop. Be a work shoe, be that patent shoe. Don't be afraid to get your hands dirty in work and know that the blood of Jesus Christ will take care of even mistakes that you make spiritually speaking. I think that we need to learn to look at the things that are around us. I never put on a shoe, having talked about these shoes so much, or I seldom would put on a shoe, that I don't think about some lesson. When I put on my shoes, I wear big shoes. I get my money's worth when I buy a pair of shoes. But I have found a lot of lessons, and I think there are a lot of lessons in this tonight for us. And if we will learn to take simple things, even children understand a lesson like this, and I suppose even adults understand it fairly well. But I'm convinced that we need to get back to lessons like Jesus taught. Jesus saw a mustard seed, or at least talked to them about a mustard seed. May have been walking along and saw a man sowing his seed. What did he do? He taught a lesson from it, didn't he? People knew about the nets down by the sea. What did he teach? About the kingdom of heaven being like a net. And it's amazing when you read through Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John to look at all the lessons that Jesus taught from very simple things. And I believe that we need to do that also. Now I'm going to pause for just a moment. And if you, especially you students, need to go ahead and leave, I'm going to talk for about 10 or 15 minutes on the next lesson, 10 or 12, and let all of you out about 5:40. If you can stay for that, we'd like for you to, but don't feel embarrassed. If you do need to get up and leave, because we realize that there is a tight schedule for some, I'm going to let the overhead screen down and get the overhead projector for the second lesson. And if you do need to leave, please feel free to do that. I am learning to use the overhead projector a great deal more than I used to. I've used the flannel graph lessons and the chart lessons for years, and I've used flannel graph lessons some, but I'm finding that even in teaching, particularly in the Wednesday night class in the auditorium, that just some very simple charts and some simple ideas that are on the overhead projector are very helpful. I want to present to you a lesson tonight that is a very simple lesson, and yet one that I think can help us in our teaching even of other people. I don't think I have used this lesson since I have been here in the church here. I've used all the principles that are involved in it, but I don't think I have used the lesson as an overhead lesson. But this lesson is to show that baptism means immersion. Now, I think sometimes we try to teach too much in one lesson. There are a lot of things about the subject of baptism that need to be taught, but I'm not trying to teach everything about it tonight. I'm basically trying to show one thing with this lesson. And when we're studying with people, we need to try to show one thing at a time. I think sometimes we bring about confusion if we try to teach too many different things at one time. Let's teach something, be sure it's understood, and then go to something else. And so tonight we're dealing with seven physical requirements in baptism. And when we look at all seven of these, I think we can draw the conclusion that baptism is by immersion. Of course, most of us understand that the word itself means that. But starting down toward the bottom of the chart, you'll notice that water is involved. Can you see that all right, or we need to turn the lights off? Can you see it okay? All right, the Bible teaches us in the example at the household of Cornelius that Peter said, "Can any man forbid water that these should be baptized even as we?" So first, the Bible teaches us that water is involved. But not only that, in the second place, in John 3:23, John the Baptist was baptizing in Enon near to Salem because of what? Because there was much water there. Now, there was something about the baptism, and as far as the method is concerned, the physical requirements for baptism, John's baptism and baptism into Christ are the same. There are some differences in other ways, but as far as the type and the method involved, it's the same. So John was baptizing in Enon near to Salem because there was much water there. There are some forms of the practice of baptism. It's not really true to the meaning of the word itself, but some forms that are used in the practice of it today that would not need much water. But for some reason, John needed much water when he was baptizing. Then look over to the left of the chart at the number 3 point, and in the story of the conversion of the Ethiopian eunuch, it says they came to a certain water. They came to a certain water. It wasn't the idea that they had a jug of water in the chariot, or that somebody brought a glass of water and used something like that, but they came to a certain water, indicating there was some kind of a body of water that they approached as they were riding along. So they came in the direction of a certain water. Number 4, it says also in that passage in verse 38 that they stopped the chariot and did what? They went down into the water, didn't they? In order to perform what is taking place, they had to stop the chariot, get out of the chariot, and go down into this body of water to which they had come. So they went down into the water. Turning to two other passages, we find that baptism is described in the Bible as a burial. Never have been able to understand how anybody could think that sprinkling or the pouring of water would constitute baptism when we have at least these two passages that talk about burial. One of them says, buried with him by baptism into death, Romans 6:4. And the other one says, buried with him in baptism, wherein we are risen with him through faith in the operation of God who hath raised him from the dead, over in Colossians 2 and verse 12. I remember a certain individual with whom I was studying years ago, and he was one who had believed up until that time that baptism did not have to be a burial. I showed him Romans 6:4, and he said, well, that says buried by baptism. It doesn't say buried in. What did I do? Turn to Colossians 2:12, and it says what? Buried in baptism. I'm amazed at how easy it is to find an answer to any question if we're willing just to go to the Bible and look. Sometimes we don't look as much as we should to find what the Bible teaches. The Bible is so plain and so simple when we really turn to it. But we have those two passages that baptism is a burial. Then going back to the story of the Ethiopian eunuch, they went down into the water. He baptized him. Then what did they do? They came up out of the water. They went down into it. There's where the baptism took place, which is described as a burial. And then they came up out of the water in verse 39. And then the seventh point is that after they had come out of the water, they went away from the water. And that's true here in Acts 8, and it's also true, the principle is true, in Acts the 16th chapter. They took the Philippian jailer and his household, and they were baptized, and then they came back into the house that night, didn't they, in Acts 16. So that means that they went, just like the example of the Ethiopian eunuch, they went to a place where they could do what God requires in scriptural baptism, and then it says they came back into the house, and he set meat before them, and it says that he was a believer at that time. He had been baptized. He'd already washed their stripes. You know the rest of that story. So really, when you look at what the Bible has to say, and this is just a little simple outline, and if I were preaching this as a sermon, I would go into detail on each of these points a bit more. But if you had something like this and you're studying with someone in personal work, personal evangelism, and you could just sit down with this, if you just had a picture of this on a sheet of paper, and you sat down and took your Bibles and said, let's just look at what the Bible has to say. I believe that if anyone is honest and with an open mind, that if you show them these seven points, there is water involved, there's much water involved, they came to the water, they went down into the water, the baptism that took place is a burial, then they came up out of the water, and they went away from the water, that there's just too much evidence there to believe anything else, and that this is convincing to someone who has an open mind and really looks at what the Bible has to say. This is a very simple lesson, but I think it's the kind that we need when we're trying to teach people about the plan of salvation and what is necessary. We did make it tonight. The next bell, I think, is supposed to ring in about a minute or two, and the third session begins at 5:43 in each of these areas. Now, there are some centers downstairs, especially over in the three big rooms over there. There are two upstairs over the offices in those big rooms. There's one in the big room down here, I think, right under this section. And then there is the Jericho Center in the Activity Center. And each night, at about the time just before the third session begins, we will be through in here. I'll try to have two lessons, two short lessons each night, and then we will dismiss. And also, there are refreshments in the education building. If you don't want to go to one of the centers and you want to stay around for a few minutes and visit, you're welcome to do that in here or over where the refreshments are. But we're going to dismiss each night at about this point in the service so that you'll have time if you want to go and see. It's amazing what some of them have done in preparation for these learning centers. Now, on Wednesday night, let me tell you this, because it might cause you to want to go somewhere else tonight and Monday and Tuesday night. On Wednesday night, we won't come back into the auditorium that night. We're all going to the Activity Center. All the kids are going to march around Jericho seven times, and I jokingly said, I'm going to shout, and the walls are going to fall down. So you won't see that Wednesday night. You may want to go over there before Wednesday night, but you'll especially want to go on Wednesday night. So we are through in here for tonight. You're welcome to go. Let me just say this. If you go to one of the centers downstairs particularly, and the room is full with the children when they get in there, don't go into the room. Just stand outside and see what's going on. But at least we want you to get a look and a little bit of a feeling of what our children are learning in Vacation Bible School. I appreciate each one of you being here tonight. And I hope if it's reasonably possible that you will try to be here tomorrow night and Tuesday night and Wednesday night. We are dismissed. You may do what you'd like to do.